You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, ChristianHumanist.org.
To all of the forgotten men and women who have been neglected, abandoned, and left behind, you will be forgotten no longer. We will press forward, and together we will win, win, win. And quite simply put, we will very quickly make America great again. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Wisconsin. God bless you. God bless you, Wisconsin, and God bless the United States of America, our great country. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal. Joining me on the show today is Nathan Gilmore, English teacher at North Gwinnett High School. Is it Gwinnett or Gwinnett? How am I?
Gwinnett.
North Gwinnett High School.
Named after Button Gwinnett, signer of the Declaration of Independence.
I'm shamed for not knowing how to pronounce that then. the name stares me in the face every semester. And of course, I introduce you as an English teacher. It's summer. You know, we don't do anything in the summers, right? You're man about town. Cocktails and soap operas.
Pretty much.
Nathan, what's going on around the network?
All right. So, I mean, you know, the Christian Humanist Radio Network soldiers on, the Christian Feminists. Did an episode on and I've only looked at the show notes. I haven't listened to the episode yet, but what I take to be a musical about the Christmas story called Journey to Bethlehem. I have no familiarity with it, but, you know, what better time to do a Christmas episode than late July? So that's rocking and rolling.
Christmas in July is a thing, right?
I have heard that phrase. So we'll roll with it. Before They Were Live is still doing episodes on the Grimm Brothers. They had to do another delay, but when they do record those episodes, the discussions are a lot of fun, so you should tune into that. And I've had a couple of biblical studies interviews on Christian Humanist Profiles, one with Asbury Seminary New Testament professor Ben Witherington, and another with, I've forgotten what university she's from, but fill-in British university here. Old Testament scholar Catherine Dell. Both were really fun conversations, so I encourage listeners to go listen to those.
All right, thanks, Nathan. We are talking today about the Republican National Convention, the big gathering of the official delegates of the Republican Party to nominate the candidate for president that took place over the last 4 days. So this episode should post on the Friday after the convention, which Nathan and I have spent a significant amount of time watching. Nathan, what was your impression of the thing overall? Give us like a 30-second overview of how you feel about the last 4 days.
Man, it warped my brain. It really did. I have not paid this much attention to a party convention since about the summer of 2000. I haven't listened to a convention house band for this long. I haven't listened to this many convention speakers. I haven't seen this many convention celebrities for about 25 years. So it's definitely been an experience for me. I do have a question, Coyle, and I like to avail myself of your education and your expertise. In 2000, people commented that George W. Bush really kind of stepped up the theatrics of the party convention. But it had already been a televised event as long as I could remember. Did that kind of very produced television event emerge in the wake of 1968, which I know we've mentioned before, or was it already a television event in 1968 that just happened to detonate?
Yeah, and you say that I'm the scholar of this, and I am not, so I don't know.
Of the two of us, you are.
Well, yeah. So I know that the 68 one was the one that exploded, of course, right? Violence and rioting in Chicago. And on the entertainment side of things, famously, ABC brought on William F. Buckley and Gore Vidal to do the analysis. So there's I think it's a Netflix documentary about that called Best of Enemies that's fantastic.
Yes.
Really, worth watching.
And that encounter was always Danny Anderson's aspiration for the Christian Humanist Radio Network.
Yeah.
He said we should do more shows like that.
Well, we'd have to be watching something live, right? We'd have to find some kind of cultural something or other and have all of us live streaming, which would in some ways be much easier to do today than it was in 19. You had to have a major network doing it. in 68. Yeah. And now you can just turn on your webcam and a bunch of people sit around. Amazon will let you do that with movies. You can host watch parties movies on Amazon, which I think is the dumbest sounding thing ever. But anyway, I guess it makes for good TV in the 60s. So short answer is I don't know. I've watched all of the last two sets of conventions up until now, so the 2016, 2020, and then this one. Of course, the 2020 conventions are sort of getting an asterisk next to them because of COVID. So the Democratic convention was almost entirely recorded. Their last night, I think, was in like a parking lot or something like that. It was some kind of drive-in.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then the same thing with the Republicans, like lots of pre-recorded stuff. And then the last night was sort of mildly controversially at Fort McHenry, which raised questions of whether national monuments ought to be used for political party conventions. I was reading something, and I don't remember where it was, that people were really excited about the Republican convention this year because they got to bring back the balloon drop. When it's all over and Trump has finished his speech, they drop the 10,000 balloons or whatever it is. And of course, they couldn't do that in 2020 because it was at Fort McHenry and you can't drop balloons outside. There's nothing to drop them
from. Right.
So all that long-winded answer to say, I don't know. It's always certainly as long as it's been televised, there has to be some kind of spectacle to it.
Absolutely, yeah.
At what point are you intentionally, bringing Kid Rock on stage? Well, that I don't know, right? I don't know.
Well, George W. Bush 24 years ago had, and I can't remember which one it was, but he had an R&B singer perform. And, I remember joking to my roommate at the time, I wasn't married yet, there's nothing that says R&B to me quite as much as a Republican convention.
Well, and obviously some of that is going to be for the people there, right? It's not for the people watching at home. It's for the delegates. So we were talking before we started about the house band at the RNC, right? They're not really there for those of us watching on the live stream, right? They're there to fill in the gaps in between. On the first night, I think it was, they had some kind of technical issue. The teleprompter shut off on Mike Johnson. And he had to say the teleprompter just shut off. And it was at a procedural moment, so it wasn't even his speech. He couldn't just riff on it and keep going. He had to go in the right order, so they had to get it fixed. So all of a sudden, the house band is on. Right? They have to just impromptu play, and they have to do it until the stuff is fixed and they can get. And it ended up being 30 or 40 minutes. I mean, it was a chunk of time. So that's always there, and that's not really for us. The Kid Rock song, that's kind of for everyone. That's for the people there and for the people watching at home. But the stuff that's for the delegates, I assume that's been there for a while. I'm not a historian of it. But I assume that if you go back into the late 19th century, they're going to have, preachers come in and kind of fill in the time.
That makes good sense.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they got there and did their business and went home. But, I wouldn't be surprised if there were some kind of something for the delegates.
I gotcha. Well, Coyle, I mean, I want to ask you about the fallen primary contenders, because, I mean, as a group, they were given short time slots.
Yeah.
And really, and I'm going to say there's four of them because I'm going to count Ted Cruz. But you had, DeSantis and Ramaswamy and Cruz and then Nikki Haley. And of the four, I only saw Nikki Haley really acknowledge that she was ever Donald Trump's opponent. Famously or infamously, and I mean, you got a shot in on this as you were, what does one call live commenting on Facebook?
Yeah,
I guess just commenting.
Tweeting.
There you go. He didn't even take the shot that he took 8 years ago.
Stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
But I mean, obviously, I mean, the party wants to show some unity, so we bring in the primary opponents to endorse and to praise the candidate. Is the tone different when the candidate is someone whose repertoire contains so much insult?
No, and there, I want to be a little careful. There there seemed to be less insult this time around than there was in 2016. Right? Obviously, 2020 is not a good parallel, in part because in 2020 he was the incumbent. So there you can insult Joe Biden, but Joe Biden's been off the scene for 4 years, so those are always somewhat limited. Of course, the thing that looms over this is the assassination attempt. Right? That's the shadow that's being cast on everything. The Trump campaign did explicitly say they had toned down a lot of their rhetoric, and amped up the message of unity, not just inter-party unity, but national unity as well. Now there was still some, you know, Biden's terrible, not in the bad person sense necessarily, but mostly in the he's just not physically capable of doing the job. There's a lot of the Democrats are terrible and the left is terrible, but Biden specifically was not attacked personally as much as you might have expected. They were still there.
I didn't notice that.
It was red meat was still thrown out for the base. Like there was still a lot of that. I do wonder what it would have looked like if they hadn't made some kind of conscious effort to go through and tone it down. Of the four that you mentioned, right? DeSantis and Ramaswamy and Cruz and Haley. The obvious, and Brigham was there also, governor of North Dakota.
I was probably picking up my daughter from a volleyball practice when Brigham was speaking.
he was earlier in the day and was shorter than they were. I assume, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes. I assume there's some combination of, if you're a major candidate, you have some kind of right to speak. So back in 2016, the rule was if you had hit some kind of threshold, you got a moment in front of the convention. You got a chance to sort of have your say, with the understanding you were supposed to acknowledge the victory of the other candidate, which Ted Cruz famously did not do. Right? The vote your conscience line. This time, I don't know if that rule is still on the books. I know that Trump went through and changed a bunch of the rules for 2020. So I don't know if that rule is still there, but they clearly let them on stage. I would assume that one of the requirements was you have to profess your loyalty to Donald Trump. Like you have to support the candidate.
Right.
I can't imagine that there wasn't some kind of condition or deal made about that. Maybe not. One of the speakers last night very unambiguously said no one put any restrictions on what I say. And if they did, I wouldn't have. It was the WWE guy.
You mean Hulk Hogan?
No, the other one.
The chief of not WWE, but World Fighting Championship. Universal Fighting Championship, UFC.
These are all just acronyms. I know WWF.
It is a mixed martial art promotion, so I mean, the difference between it and WWE is that the results are not scripted for UFC.
Okay.
It is a competition whose results are open at the beginning of the event.
They had this guy who basically said no conditions were placed.
And for the people who know me, they'll know this is true. I just want to make something very clear. Nobody in the Trump campaign has ever told me what to say. Nobody tells me what to say, and I'm nobody's puppet.
So I don't know. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but all of them unambiguously endorsed Trump. DeSantis got a little campaigny for what he's doing in Florida, in the middle of his speech. But even then, it was still pointing towards Trump. So
And Haley actually mentioned that she doesn't agree with Trump on everything.
Yeah,
but I mean that's about as strong as it got.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't go into specifics. I made suggestions on social media.
I also saw that.
Yeah, number of mistresses. I assume they disagree on that. But otherwise, you know, she didn't say anything specific.
Right. Now, I mean, one person, I mean, you know, who tragically was not present for the convention, but who I would say was really the star of the convention. You already mentioned him. Is Corey Temperatore. He is the person who died last week at, you know, a Trump rally in Pennsylvania. You know, he was hit by one of the sniper's bullets. And I mean, he, like I said, I mean, his name came up, I feel like, more than just about anyone's. And, you know, we'll talk more about this as we talk about the ways that individual speakers, you know, engaged with him. But I guess the question I have for you, and obviously, I mean, you're not privy to what's happening behind the scenes, but infer for us as a professional, because you're the professional here. I'm the schmuck. You know, how much of this convention got rewritten and how fast in the 4 days before the convention started?
Yeah. So obviously, and we talked about this on social media too, not to make it all about our private conversations on social media, but, some of it,
isn't this fun, listeners?
Yeah, some of the stuff was obviously pre-recorded, right? Some of it was already canned. So they showed the same, one or two videos of Donald Trump all four nights. I mean, it was just the same video. And I assume that that's because that's what they had ready to go. And they had planned to film, to record some more kind of daily. And then the assassination attempt happened and he was unavailable for further filming. So they just used the same one. So I assume some of those obviously didn't change because they couldn't change. Clearly there were speakers who would not have been speakers. If this hadn't happened. There were part references in speeches, that wouldn't have happened if not for that. And again, we've already mentioned they claim they toned it down, right? They scaled back some of the rhetoric. There was some scrambling. There was also some stuff that was clearly that was going to be said no matter what, right? The economy, the changes in the economy over the last 4 years, the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, the war in Ukraine, the war in Gaza. These were all no matter what, right? There is nothing. If the assassination attempt had been successful, all of these things would still have been mentioned at the convention.
Yeah.
Because they are things that you can sort of squarely place on Joe Biden.
Right, they are this cycle's talking points.
Right. Well, and maybe even more than talking, like they are actual objective things that are going on.
I'm not saying they're disconnected from the political life of America. I'm just saying the party has focused in on these things as the message.
Right. So we will never know what would have happened, to use the good C.S. Lewis line there, right? We're not told what would have happened. But I think you can see the obvious easy things, right? Talking repeatedly about Corey Tepetore and his family. They had his widow was there, is that right? I don't remember.
I believe so, yeah. And then they also had his helmet there, which we'll talk about that later, because that was a Trump speech moment that deserves its own comment.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, it was very Trump. And in some ways fine. I'm still thinking about what I think about that. My gut reaction is that's kind of weird, but it's not for me. Like that moment wasn't targeted at me. So.
Oh shoot. Well, I want to talk about another weird moment, and I'm going to go out of order, Coyle. So that's fine. You know, if you want to bring us back to a chronological order, you can. Yep. But
well, before we go out of order. Can we just talk about the theme of the convention quickly? So here's the part that I always think is mildly fun. Every night has its own theme, right? So every night has its own topic that speakers then generally proceed to ignore, but it's still there. So the overall theme is the forgotten man, right? That's the overall four nights is Donald Trump is the voice of the person that the fat cats in the swamp in D.C. have overlooked. We get specific examples of who the forgotten man are. They're mentioned by speakers, but I think the people that they bring out are probably better examples of who they're targeting. So they had a single mom whose husband fell victim to drugs, was the way she was introduced. A member of a construction union in New York City was a speaker. So these are just citizens, right? They're not politicians or anything like that. They're just citizens. One gentleman was introduced as a grandfather and retiree, which I thought was kind of interesting. A father and small businessman, a number of families who had lost children or family members to drugs, especially to fentanyl. And my absolute favorite was the lady who the introduction was her name, and then her title that they introduced her by was Latina.
Yep.
So that was the forgotten. That's the overall theme. And then each night you had Make America Wealthy Again the first night, Make America Safe Again the second night, Make America Strong Again the third night, and then Make America Great Once Again the fourth night, which that once kind of fell out. I don't think I actually heard it from any speaker, but that was the actual title.
No, I didn't either. Yeah, I saw that title. Yeah, Thank you for mentioning that. So I'm going to jump straight to night four because the weirdest 15 minutes of this convention for me were Tucker Carlson freestyling. And I mean, you could, I mean, I infer that there was no script here. He was just saying stuff that came to his mind. And I mean, it had your normal Tucker Carlson weirdness, like Antifa came to my house.
I mean, I assume he is telling the truth there. So that's Joe Biden's America, Nathan. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. But you also got, I mean, this.
Not only did Antifa come to his house, Donald Trump showed up personally and defended the front door.
Yes. But you also had, I mean, honestly, this was to me weirder than the Antifa came to my house anecdote. Is this, you know, again, he seemed to be making it up on the spot, but this idea of organic leadership that was absent for Trump's entire 4 years as actual president, but that, you know, emerged because he became the most courageous among us 4 days ago. And I, you know, on one hand, you know, I think of, you know, things like, you know, as old as, you know, the idea of, you know, a natural aristocracy that you find in, you know, John Adams and folks like that. But, I mean, Coyle, I mean, you know, is this informed by anything resembling a political theory, or is this just Tucker Carlson riffing?
I mean, it was Tucker Carlson riffing in an attempt to, point out how that particular event changes people, right? So, so this is a conversation I was having in another setting. What is the impact of the assassination attempt on Donald Trump himself, right? So my wife is kind of her reflection is, you know, he was millimeters away from death, as Trump says. Mm-hmm. Someone else there did die. Well, that's going to affect you, right? To Trump's credit, I will admit I was wrong about this. My thought is something like this happens, Trump's going to use a Secret Service agent as a human shield and try to get out of there and run. He didn't do that, right? He popped right back up, shouted fight, and shot his arm up in the air in that Josh Hawley style fist bump, left. So
yeah,
full credit to him.
And that was a full on professional wrestling moment right there.
Yep.
You know, I can't remember if we were recording yet or not, but I'm on social media, part of several professional wrestling fan groups. And, I mean, every one of them lit up when that happened, and it wasn't about the fact that an assassination had happened.
Yep.
It was, holy cow, he found the live cam and he cut his promo.
Well, assuming that he is being straightforward with us, and I think Donald Trump is many things. I do not think he's a liar. I think he is not a liar in kind of the George Costanza sense, like
that, because
you know, I think whatever he says at any given second, he firmly believes it, and just
believes
changes second to second.
So he is not duplicitous in that sense.
Right. So I think what he said in his speech was his first thoughts were about the crowd. Like his first thought was, hey, these guys aren't stampeding. They're not running away. They're sticking out to see how I'm doing. And I owe them something. I didn't think he had that in him either. Like the fact that his first thought is, you know, someone other than himself, I will admit I'm impressed with that. That's to Trump's credit. I was mistaken about that corner of his character. So I think what Tucker Carlson was trying to do is sort of package all of that and say, hey, that is going to make him a better leader is probably what he intended to say.
Or what he should have said if he had edited a speech.
Right. But what came out was basically Trump's now a real leader because he has faced his own mortality and come out better.
Right.
Forgetting, you know, the guy was the leader. And I think he said is he became the leader of the nation that day.
Yeah.
When he stood up after being shot in the face, bloodied, and put his hand up, I thought at that moment, that was a transformation. This was no longer a man. Well, I think that. I think it was divine intervention. But the effect that it had on Donald Trump, he was no longer just a political party's nominee, or a former president, or a future president. This was the leader of a nation. And I think there's a difference.
Like, he was president for 4 years. What are you talking about? Like, what is happening here?
Now, point two, and I've got three little nuggets from Tucker Carlson, and I'm not counting the Antifa came to my house as one of them, is, I mean, again, just in this riffing, and you know, what I'm curious about, I mean, does this reflect, you know, theories that are live on the online right now, or is this something that is just a Tucker Carlson riff? This idea of democracy as ownership, you know, it's one of those things that, I mean, sounded like an actual idea, which honestly I don't hear a lot at political events. So, I mean, you know, is democracy as ownership something that is extant right now among right-wing influencers, or is this something, again, that Tucker Carlson just riffed?
Democracy, in case you're a little sick of being beaten in the face with democracy on television, actual democracy is the proposition that the citizens of a country own that country. They're not renters, they're not serfs, they're not slaves, they are the owners of the country. And for that to be true, their leaders have to represent them, which is another way of saying they have to do what the people want them to do.
I don't know about that specific phrasing, but that lines up with several other lines. I don't remember specifically who it was. Someone said in their talk, America is not just an idea, it's a home.
That would be J.D. Vance.
Is that J.D. Vance? And then someone.
I absolutely wrote that in my notes.
Yeah. So and there were several variations on that. So we heard something like that from Ron DeSantis. We heard something like that from Eric Schmidt, the senator from Missouri.
And honestly, that sounds like something someone would say having read Roger Scruton.
So what happened? What happened? That's going on in the background of this, and I know because I'm doing research, like academic research on this right now.
Awesome.
Last week. Or 2 weeks ago, I forget which at this point, because the convention just muddles everything together in my mind, was the fourth National Conservatism Conference. Those individuals were speakers at it. So what we were getting is the sort of popular political filtering down of the kind of high-level policy and idea stuff that was going on at the National Conservatism Conference. So way back in the day, Ed and I did an episode on national conservatism. It is sort of slowly expanding. This conference was significantly larger than their first one. More sort of practical, real world politicians speaking at it. More getting into the weeds of policy. But we're seeing that. So what I think what we were hearing from Tucker is a kind of popularizing of what the national conservatives are trying to do.
Okay, and then nugget number three is the weird landing of that speech. I mean, you know, where, again, I could tell, or let me back that up. I speculate that he is trying to invoke, you know, one of Abraham Lincoln's more famous utterances. But he said something to the effect of, I don't know whether I'm on God's side. I'm not even sure that the party is on God's side, but God is present and that's enough. Yeah. And, you know, what occurred to me. You know, I mean, after hearing a pastor earlier in the evening that I'm going to talk about a little bit later, is Tucker Carlson going to be our exemplar for theological humility? Because that would make my world a lot weirder.
And I'll just stop with this. I'm not always convinced that I'm on the right side. I've been on the wrong side many times. You'll never hear me say I'm on God's side or God's with me or even I'm with God. I want to be. Not sure I am. But I will say this unequivocally and conclusively. God is among us right now. And I think that's enough. God bless you.
I mean, we got that from Tucker. There was Franklin Graham's discussion, I guess, for lack of a better term. And then we got a little bit of that from Trump, too. I mean, he was very explicit. God preserved my life. Franklin Graham was very explicit. God preserved his life. Graham sort of even carried it into the stuff that we've been seeing on social media. You know, why did God protect Trump and not this other guy, not the other people who were there?
Sure.
Right. So Franklin Graham even sort of publicly mused on that,
who, oh dear heavens, looks like his father now.
Oh yeah. I was
blown away. yeah. But anyway, go ahead. Keep rolling.
So, I don't know, but it wasn't just Tucker. He was not the only person.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, but he said more clearly than the others, I don't know whether God is on our side.
Right. Well, yeah.
And that just strikes me as something weird to say at a political event, even right. if you think it.
Right.
It doesn't strike me as something that people say at political events.
Right. No,
but again,
that's true.
I mean, he was very clearly, I mean, he was doing an episode of his talk show in front of the National Convention.
Yeah, certainly. He does still have a talk show, right? He's not on Fox anymore, but he's on
Twitter. No, I think he still does a streaming show, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's right, because he had the interview with Putin a couple of
Gosh, yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know if our listeners would want an episode on that, but oh man, could we do an episode on that. So, Coyle, I do want to talk about some of these pastors that appeared on stage, and one of them is the Reverend Lorenzo Sewell. And, you know, I didn't watch all 4 days of the convention in their entirety, but of the parts that I did, I mean, his struck me as the most flagrantly partisan in his view of Providence, right? He kept going back to a paraphrase of Mordecai's line in Esther, who knows, perhaps it is for such a day, except that he brought Jesus into that utterance in a kind of a weird way. You know, and he was probably the least reserved in saying that, you know, God has chosen Trump so that Trump can be Trump.
To all my friends back in Detroit who are Democrats, I want to ask you just one simple question. You can't deny the power of God on this man's life. You can't deny that God protected him. You cannot deny that it was a millimeter miracle that was able to save this man's life. Could it be that Jesus Christ preserved him for such a time as this? Could it be?
Now, with that said, you watched more of the convention than I did. I mean, were other preachers that bold, or was Sewell the big one?
No, he was certainly the big one. I mean, there were a handful of other religious figures there, mostly doing the invocation and the benediction. Right? I mean, that was the most common. But even then, there was some of that. But he was the one who was sort of explicit about it. I didn't keep track of all the religious figures that were speaking. I probably should have given the network we're on, but I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to that. That sort of rhetoric just kind of washes past me at this point. I just kind of write that off as...
Well, and here's a question I have for you. And again, this is my lack of preparation. To what extent, if at all, was Robert Jeffress involved in this convention?
I did not see him there. I mean, I'm sure he was there somewhere. He was never on stage that I noticed.
Okay, because I think of him as sort of the Trump pastor-in-chief. So I was kind of surprised that I didn't see him.
He wasn't there. Paula White wasn't there.
You're right. Yeah.
So there were a handful of kind of the Trump orbit people who I say they weren't there. They were probably at the convention somewhere, but they weren't on stage. Okay. So,
and that's curious to me. That really is. Now the other one that I'll go ahead.
Well, yeah. So if we want to, yes, we want to go down the evangelical route on some level, I'm assuming Trump is just probably rightly assuming that he's got the evangelical vote in the bag. So
yeah,
he doesn't need to do very much of that. He's kind of got, he's got that. So even things like taking abortion out of the platform, taking gay marriage out of the platform, I'm seeing outrage on my right wing conservative social media side of things.
Right. Although transgender policy was still very prominent in a lot of speeches.
It was mentioned. I'm not sure where that lands in the platform. I haven't gone and looked back at that.
Oh, and I haven't looked in the platform. I'm just thinking of the speeches that I listened to.
Yeah, it was almost there.
Almost nobody mentioned abortion, but I mean, I counted at least five that mentioned something about transgender.
Did Trump himself mention it? I don't remember that.
Not that I remember. Not that I remember.
Because he has been sort of quiet on that topic. Again, recently I haven't been paying attention to much of the campaign. But the past few days, that's he's been quiet on that, and he is sort of famously much farther to the left on that issue than, you know, the vast majority of the Republican Party.
Right.
Again, I think he's just saying, look, they're not going to vote for Biden, so I don't have to worry about that. So,
yeah.
I don't need Robert Jeffress on stage, and I don't need Paula White here, and I don't need any of these.
Right.
I don't know why then Franklin Graham was there, other than maybe they're friends. So.
Yeah, and then all the old voters who look at him and, you know,
no, that's true.
The instant visual identification with Billy Graham. But Franklin really is, I mean, the one that stood out to me as the contrast to Sewell, because, I mean, he did say God spared his life. But, I mean, he pretty much, you know, touched that as a, you know, he has to touch first base. But then he immediately pivoted to a, you know, Billy Graham crusade style, you know, John 3:16 moment, you know, which, you know, just seemed entirely out of place at this convention. But then, you know, he drifted from there into some, you know, preacher style call and response. And, you know, then, you know, his prayer was, I mean, honestly, something that, you know, could have been at a bipartisan Washington event without offending too many people. So, I mean, you know, it's odd, you know, Franklin Graham, I think undisputably better known than Lorenzo Sewell. I mean, I'd never heard of Reverend Lorenzo Sewell. But he kind of hedges his Trump bet, but Sewell goes all in.
Well, and I mean, that if it had been Billy Graham there, that's what I would have expected to have heard.
Yeah, yeah.
And, some of what we've heard from Franklin Graham, really more in writing, I think. I don't follow his speeches, so I don't know what his speeches are like, I guess. So maybe
right,
this is what
right.
he always does. But I know some of the op-eds and some of the social media posts that he's put out have been more sort of openly partisan and, you know, more pro-Trump. Although he does on occasion disagree with Trump, too. So he disagreed over some of the border stuff, some of the immigration, treatment of immigrants. I mean, Franklin Graham's kind of famously said, hey, this isn't okay on several occasions. But if Billy Graham were to speak at a convention, maybe he did. I don't know. What Franklin Graham said is what I would have expected from Billy Graham. So maybe he was just doing what he thought he should be doing. So props to him for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I mean, and, you know, as you said, I mean, I was more surprised by Graham's reserve than I was by Sewell's lack of reserve.
Yeah.
So, and I was surprised. I was surprised and pleased.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about J.D. Vance because, I mean, he is. I'll go ahead and put my cards on the table, Coyle. I don't much like J.D. Vance, the 2024 version, but I really like the book Hillbilly Elegy.
It's a great book.
Yeah. And you know, I mean. First of all, I mean, I'll just go and say it's hilarious that, you know, there are this rash of 7 years later takedowns of the book popping up in my social media feed. But, I mean, you know, I can see why, because, you know, once I watched that speech, and once again, I was driving out to a volleyball event because volleyball owns me when he was actually speaking live. So I watched the speech later. But, I mean, you know, his recap of Hillbilly Elegy, I mean, you know, tells a compelling story about, you know, a swath of America that happens to include Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, and what am I forgetting? Michigan. That's the other blue wall, you know, that is going to be crucial in this election, right? So, I mean, you know, even if he weren't I think, opportunistic Trump loyalist, I mean, you know, just his geography is incredibly strategic in this election cycle. But, I mean, I want to hear your impressions of Vance's speech, because I mean I told Mary once I had a chance to watch it, I said this guy sounds like he's read a book. This is a refreshing change at a political event.
Yeah, I mean it's exactly what I would expect from someone like J.D. Vance. Like you said, so we actually did an episode with it was Ed and Jordan and Danny and me 7 years ago on Hillbilly Elegy.
I remember.
So I went back and re-listened to that, and I don't think I would change a whole lot of what I said. It's a good book, and it catches a lot of important ideas, even though it is primarily a memoir, right? That's really the main thing that's going on there. So again, it's that national conservatism working through. So J.D. Vance was one of the speakers at the National Conservatism Convention. I think it's very much in line with that. Now Tucker Carlson actually made, I think, an important point. The first reason, the primary reason Vance was chosen is that he is representative of what Trump supporters want. Right. That's sort of reason number one, which was Carlson's way of saying he agrees with Donald Trump. Right. The first sort of criteria there is being aligned with Trump. And then the second criteria is all of the stuff you were saying. I mean, there's a lot of people who are aligned with Trump, but he didn't pick, you know, the governor of North Dakota. Instead, he picked the guy from the Rust Belt, obviously hoping to sort of do the Mike Pence thing and swing those Rust Belt states in his direction, but then not do the Mike Pence thing and you know, stick with him all the way through.
Right.
So I think that's probably what's going on there. The speech itself was fine. I mean, it's what I would expect to hear from J.D. Vance.
Right. I was interested, I mean, when he took a pretty clear stand against the Iraq War.
When I was a senior in high school, that same Joe Biden supported the disastrous invasion of Iraq. And at each step of the way, in small towns like mine in Ohio or next door in Pennsylvania or Michigan, in states all across our country, jobs were sent overseas and our children were sent to war. I agree. And somehow, a real estate developer from New York City by the name of Donald J. Trump was right on all of these issues while Biden was wrong.
Yeah, Trump's been doing that for 8 years now, right?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I guess, you know, part of it is, I mean, like, I'm still holding on to 2003.
Right.
And, you know, it just struck me. It didn't really surprise me, but it did strike me that, of course, you know, he mentions Biden as the one who supported the Iraq War.
Sure.
But, I mean, really, I mean, he is also, and I don't think this is lost on anyone in that room, he is basically driving another nail into the coffin of the GOP of Reagan and the Bushes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, despite the shout out to Reagan from Trump's speech, right? I mean that GOP is functionally dead.
Well, that's only because Reagan also got shot.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, my son, you know, who's a very bright guy, you know, I was mentioning when we were driving somewhere, I said, you know, why in the world does he have Reagan video playing? I mean, his whole project is dismantling Reagan's GOP, and my son said, yeah, but Reagan got shot, so I mean, you know, he wants to put himself in that bloodline.
Well, Reagan got shot, and the situation is very similar economically and militarily, right, to the 1980,
yeah.
Right? The economy is terrible. We're suffering military setbacks internationally. We have Americans being held hostage, right? I mean, it's the parallels there are you can't not use Reagan.
Sure,
at least you shouldn't not use Reagan.
Right.
So Bush becomes the target, right? Bush is the easier target. Although they don't explicitly, they don't go too hard after Bush. There's definitely that, hey, the Iraq War was wrong. We shouldn't have been in the Middle East at all. They haven't quite got to, we shouldn't have been in Afghanistan, but I suspect that's probably the next kind of the next logical step if they keep going in that direction.
Right. Although they're getting enough mileage out of the withdrawal from Afghanistan,
yep.
That I mean, they might not have to go there.
Yeah, well, it was such a shambles, right? The mileage should be gotten out of that.
Yes. You know, we already mentioned the abstract ideas versus the homeland. I mean, you know, like I said, that's something straight out of Russell Kirk. That's,
yep.
You know, like I said, when I heard that part of his speech, I mean, my thought was, hey, this guy's read a book. This is great. And now that you tell me that, I mean, you know, this convention was on the heels of a more literary conservative event, that makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah. Which Roger Scruton spoke at the National Conservative Convention that took place in England 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Oh, no kidding. All right.
So they're there is overlap between those and the sort of Russell Kirk tradition and what's going on with the National Conservatives.
Okay, very good.
They're not quite the same, but there's overlap.
And then I've got one more point that's entirely frivolous. But, you know, from the time I read Hillbilly Elegy to watching J.D. Vance's speech the morning after he gave it, every time he mentions Middletown, Ohio, whatever animosity I have towards him softens a little bit, because in 1989, I actually slept in a sleeping bag on a gym floor in Middletown, Ohio before a marching band competition. So, you know, probably 5-year-old J.D. Vance was living with his mamaw in Kentucky at the time, but Middletown is a place I've actually been, and you know, this happens in novels too. I mean, if a novel has a setting that I've actually been to, that this makes me a very petty person, but I like the novel a little bit better. So
sure. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I liked Stephen King books before I had been to Maine, so I don't know that I can go quite that far with you. But
I gotcha.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, there's a few Kurt Vonnegut novels that mention, you know, specific landmarks in Indianapolis. And,
sure.
You know, I like Kurt Vonnegut anyway, but he gets me a little bit when he mentions those places.
We should do a Vonnegut episode. I like Vonnegut, and I think he's kind of
fading
into American literary
history. We can do a novel.
History.
We can do some of his essays. I'd absolutely be down with a Vonnegut episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's think more about that. I'd be up for that.
Absolutely. What else do you have to say on Vance? Because I want to turn to Trump's big speech, but
no, let's turn to Trump. Vance is just the VP, so until the electoral votes are counted, you know, he doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, you know, when I looked at my timer, it seemed to me somewhere in between 15 and 20 minutes of his speech was I'm going to call it very pious, but not quite theological account of the assassination attempt. This is where, you got the weird kissing the relic moment with the helmet of, you know, the firefighter whose name I got to scroll up and find again, Temperatore. You know, you get the invocations of Providence, kind of. You know, you get the John 15 paraphrase. Which honestly, George W. Bush just kind of ruined me on, you know, bad Bible references when he referred to the U.S. war machine as a light, you know, that illuminates the darkness. after that point, I mean, no one could really top that in my mind. So
right.
The John 15 really didn't get me as much as it might have. But then, I mean, you know. The other thing that struck me about the opening of the speech is that, you know, up to the point where he spoke the line, you know, I accept the nomination as, you know, candidate for president, he seemed like he was actually on script, and that sounded very weird to my ear. I am used to thinking of Trump as an improv machine, and the fact that he was actually on his script made it sound almost not like Donald Trump. I mean, what do you think about the opening before we move on to the midsection?
I mean, it was... The opening was obviously not a normal Donald Trump speech. I mean, you're right. He was on script. It was subdued. Most of the speech was pretty subdued, right? Most of the speech, he was on script, and most of the speech was not what we are used to hearing at least in the 5-second sound bites that we get on the news from Donald Trump.
Right.
I think it's probably the more effective because of that, at least for the first 20 minutes or so of the speech. It humanizes Trump in a way that you don't often get, again, from the generally hostile media out there. And I guess I'm saying that as someone who's sort of generally hostile to Trump, but it's you get him, hey, this is a man who had a brush with death, and it obviously has affected him, right?
It's
clearly changed something about him. So there's that. It also... There's not going to be any way for the other side. So if we're thinking sort of craven political terms here, there's not going to be any way for the other side to attack him for the content of that. He's just
right.
Relating the event. He's celebrating the people. He's celebrating Corey Temperatore. He's mm-hmm. celebrating the crowd. And he is, I think he said he this is the only time we're ever going to get to hear this story. He basically promised never to tell it again because it was so emotionally difficult for him.
As you already know, the assassin's bullet came within a quarter of an inch of taking my life. So many people have asked me, what happened? Tell us what happened, please. And therefore, I will tell you exactly what happened. And you'll never hear it from me a second time because it's actually too painful to tell.
And I've got to ask, Coyle, do you believe him?
I don't know.
I don't. I'll just go ahead and put my cards
down.
When he made that promise, I'm like, I mean, I believe this about as much as read my lips, no new taxes.
We'll see. I mean, we'll know in a week. Like, it's the sort of thing where if he's going to break the promise, it's going to be in the next few days. Because self-control is not this man's strong suit, so...
And yet, I mean, in that speech, I mean, I had to do a double take a few times because it was so disciplined.
Yep. Oh, it was, again, it was, in some ways it was more like the 2016 acceptance speech, which again was sort of on prompt and sticking. There were a few moments where Trump as Trump came out. I assume he was also tired, right? This was the the end of a 4-day event where he was at it all day, and it's not like he has nothing to do the rest of the day. He's still doing campaign stuff the rest of the day too.
Right.
And he's what, 78 years old? So.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I mean, he is professional wrestler, 78.
Yeah.
I think
that's what
he would tell
us. He's still 78.
And we'll talk about Hulk Hogan here in a little bit, but I think of. old professional wrestlers like Hogan and like Ric Flair. And I mean, there's times I think they've got more energy than I do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm just going back to, the moment right after the attempted assassination where, if I'm there, I don't get up until a Secret Service agent picks me up from the ground, right?
Sure.
Like I am staying out of harm's way until I'm sure that every possible shooter is gone, right?
Right.
But he's, all of the fan groups that I'm part of said, man, he cut his promo.
I have friends who think he won the election with that. So
yeah. And I mean, at minimum, like I said, he distinguished himself as professional wrestler old versus Joe Biden old.
No, that's fair. Now it's. Biden is also not 78, he's 82. So there is a difference
there.
That's
not that big a gap.
It's, yeah. I am neither of those ages.
Nor am I.
I certainly know people who are active in their 80s, but they're not active in their 80s the way they were active in their 70s.
Yeah, but, point taken. I'll take that.
We'll see. It clearly at least affected his speech. Right? It affected the speech that he gave, in a way that his previous brush with death. So this has happened. I don't remember if I talked about this in this episode already. He has previously had this kind of encounter when he got COVID. Right, Trump was hospitalized for COVID. He was presumably in the hospital with other people dying from COVID, and the end result was no functional change.
No, not at all.
He learned nothing from that.
No.
But I assume being shot is different from having COVID. I've had COVID and I've not been shot.
Well,
so.
And I mean, and that is a more sympathetic take than I have. Because I think of Donald Trump as first and foremost a figure in professional wrestling, like that's where I first became aware of him at early WrestleManias.
Sure.
I think that he is using the gimmick differently this time. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I will say that there's one line from the middle of the speech that is going to be ignored, and I'm very sad that it's going to be ignored because I think it might have been the funniest line of the speech when he was talking about people who are, terribly alarmed that, MAGA is coming back and we need to stop MAGA.
Greatest movement in the history of our country. Make America great again. When they criticize it, they say, we're going to try and stop MAGA. I said, MAGA is make America great again. What are you going to stop? There's nothing to stop. Then they say, oh, that's right. It's very tough to fight it.
And he just pauses And I mean, you know, the pause really did it for me. And he said, what, do they not want America to be great? What's there to fight? There's nothing to fight. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like a, I won't say a Jerry Seinfeld level moment, but like a Nathan Gilmore trying to be Jerry Seinfeld level moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'd actually had the thought. So he opened the speech. I'd meant to ask you about this when we started talking about his speech and I just forgot. So he opened the speech with,
together we will launch a new era of safety, prosperity, and freedom for citizens of every race, religion, color, and creed.
Nathan, which of those do you not want by objecting to Trump?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Are you opposed to, is it safety? Is that the one you don't like? Or?
Well, and again, there's the discipline, right? I mean, you know, this is not the Trump that I expected. This sounded more like a national party's presidential candidate, which seems like a weird thing to say for a guy who's running his third national presidential campaign, but... he actually sounded like one. I realize I'm sounding a little bit more like Tucker Carlson than I should right now, but that night he became a presidential candidate.
Yeah, no, it was as a speech, it was fine. There were a few kind of obviously off prompter moments, but they were pretty minor. Like they were.
Yeah, when he started repeating himself at the end of the assassination story.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he should have moved on to the next point, but I mean, honestly. He didn't sound a lot different than a lot of old people who repeat themselves when they tell stories.
Sure.
He didn't sound like an unhinged would-be tyrant, right? He sounded like somebody's grandfather, which he is.
Which they hammered over and over at the convention.
Yes, they did. Right?
That was, he's a grandfather. He loves his grandkids. He's a good friend, takes care of his caddy. I mean, that's
towards the end of the speech, I mean, you know, he went to, you know, broad statements about, you know, reintroducing tariffs as industrial and economic policy.
Yeah.
He went back to some of his scary immigrant rhetoric, that's the moment where I thought, okay, now he's going to turn the corner and start sounding like Trump again. But he really got off of that pretty quickly. So, again, I mean, you know, the discipline here.
Yeah, and I mean, we could get into the weeds of some of those policies. So at one point, he said, pointed out that they're building car factories, I think, in Mexico, and it's going to be like the largest car factory in the world. And if they try to export any of those automobiles here, we're going to put a 200% tariff on it. And I just thought, you know, A, they'll just sell them elsewhere. There's 8 billion people in the world.
Right. They can sell them in Japan. They can sell them in. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
And even if you manage to shut it down, like even if whatever it is that you want to happen happens, they're just going to go to another country. So either you're going to have to chase them around with the tariffs, or I know what you want to happen is you want them to build that factory in the United States, which I would love that. I mean, I want that too. And there are certainly political things that are in the way to that. Some of the ridiculous environmental regulations. There's a lot of factors that go into that we could change that would make it easier. But at the end of the day, you're still going to have to pay American working wages. And that's going to raise the cost. It's still going to be unaffordable to most Americans if you build it here. So,
And I'm going to be the other side of the coin here for just a moment, Coyle, and say policies that are ridiculous when only one nation tries to enforce them.
Yeah.
If there were some kind of international enforcement of these environmental policies, it would have a lot less lopsided economic effect.
Yes, it would just make it expensive for all of us, right? Then it would you couldn't afford to buy a car in Venezuela.
But then, in order to compete, you would have to actually compete on a global market instead of, like you said, just taking them elsewhere.
Right.
But anyway, go ahead.
The point of that was we shouldn't be getting into the weeds like that,
because that
wasn't a serious policy proposal. That was a, hey, forgotten man out there, I know you care about this, so I'm going to say it. And I say it's not a serious policy proposal. I'm sure they will try. Whether anything will come of that, I don't know. There's still a lot of free marketers in the Republican Party, and there's still a lot of environmentalists in the Democratic Party, and I don't know if there are enough on the MAGA side of things to get anything done. But we'll see. They control the Republican Party these days, so it's entirely possible.
They are the Republican Party these days. I mean, you said that a few episodes ago, and I kind of balked at it. But I mean, having watched this convention, I'm more convinced.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that towards the end. There were Republicans who were pointedly not there. And
yes.
we'll talk about that also.
Right. Now, one recurring theme that I noticed, and, you know, again, if this is something that, you know, emerged at that National Conservative Convention, I mean, I'd be curious to know about it, but I heard at least Donald Trump Jr., J.D. Vance, and Vivek Ramaswamy make some kind of gesture towards America as a place of political dissent and discussion. And, you know, that interested me a great deal because, once again, if you think about, you know, at the very least, the public perception of Donald Trump, the perception is he's someone who brooks no dissent, who will destroy anyone who disagrees with him. So, I mean, I thought it was curious that that was something that all three of them were, and probably others as well, were mentioning. But like I said, if it was also a theme at the National Conservative gathering, that would make more sense of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I've not gone through all of – I mean, it was a 2 or 3 day event, and I'm not through it yet, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I sort of read that as again, if, and maybe this is just more typical of what I see in the news and on social media – the left has kind of hit that point where it's starting to crack down not only on the other side but on itself, right?
The left is
consuming itself. So we've seen at universities, right, pro-Israel groups being shouted down. We've seen people being fired in the wake of the assassination attempt for sort of bemoaning that it missed. I think the most generous interpretation is saying, it was Ramaswamy and Don Jr., right, were the two who really hammered this. There's a little bit from Vance also.
And Vance, yeah.
Saying, hey, it's okay to disagree, right? I think that's sort of the most generous possible interpretation is they're saying, hey, even those leftists who are saying these terrible things, you should be allowed to say these terrible things. We can disagree with each other and we can dissent. There's that message of unity, right? We can live together even though we disagree with each other. I suppose the more cynical interpretation is, you know, don't attack people on the right. MAGA people shouldn't be fired for being MAGA people. This is just for us. That's the cynical approach. I'll give them the generous assumption and say, yeah, this is for everyone. But I don't know about the National Conservative connection there.
Yeah. All right. And you know, we're going to come back to, you know, big impressions, and I know you've got some big ideas that you want to dig into, but, we got to talk about the sideshow moments. Cause these were for me, just the joy of this event. So, first of all, I mean, you commented on this on social media, but you know, John Naporte, Trump's golf caddy, was given airtime and got to give a speech in favor of Trump. As far as you know, to the extent that you know the history of these conventions, is this our first primetime caddy?
Yeah, I have no idea. I assume so. I assume that's a first. And I'm sure some of that is part of the forgotten man message, right? This is a cat. He's not just a caddy anymore. He's now some kind of higher up in whatever the golf organization is. As you pointed out before the show started, there was that moment in the debate, that super weird moment where they got into their golf games and who is the better golfer.
And I heard at least four different people mention that. And I've got to think that was written in after that debate.
Oh, certainly. Certainly that this was part of it. So it's the forgotten man side of things. And then reference to the debate, because he did spend a lot of time telling us what a good golfer Trump is. Like that was, it wasn't just that he was speaking; he was speaking about that specifically. And then I forget what the other theme was. Oh, and then the pun about the clubhouse and the White House that he fumbled a little bit at the end. But
yep.
As much as I'll miss him in the White House or in the clubhouse, we need to vote him back in the White House. Thank you very much.
I'm like, yeah, that was supposed to be a great dismount, and it just didn't happen. I felt sorry for the guy, but again, his life up to this point hasn't been leading up to speaking at a Republican National Convention, I don't think.
No, and he still did a great job. I mean,
I could not
speak in front of 10,000 people comfortably, and he nailed the delivery, even if the one line didn't come off quite the way it should have. Did a great job, and I think all of the, you know, quote, forgotten people that they brought up, they were all well coached on this. They all seemed comfortable. They all presented without stumbling and without hesitation. I mean, just right. in sort of basic speech giving technique, the Republicans did their job well.
Absolutely. Now, another weird sideshow, and really, I mean, he isn't technically a sideshow, but there were two moments in Donald Trump Jr.'s speech that struck me as sideshow moments. One was when he just wouldn't turn loose of the claim that Donald Trump is like you because he's a construction worker.
Right.
But that got overshadowed by a string of, you know, ubi sunt rhetorical questions when yeah. he said, you know, obviously Joe Biden's not running this country. Who is? Is it Kamala Harris? Is it Jill Biden? Is it the ghost of Corn Pop? So, Coyle, I've got to know, you know, as a political scientist, how prominent is the ghost of Corn Pop in American politics in 2024?
I hope he is more prominent than I thought he was before I heard that line. Like, that was not on my radar, but it is now. So someone out there needs to write an academic paper on the ghost of Corn Pop.
And Coyle, I'm very embarrassed about how many Google searches I did trying to find other references to the ghost of Corn Pop.
No.
But that seems to have come into existence at the RNC.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's I've not done the I know Biden like started this, right? This was his reference to Corn Pop as the bad dude that he had to deal with back when he's a lifeguard. Is that what it was? Like cleaning up the local pool. And I remember one of the left-wing sites, I don't remember which one it was Slate or Vox or Salon or one of those,
yeah.
did an article on what an actual bad dude Corn Pop was and what a real hero Biden was as a result. So it's not out of nowhere that Don Jr. brought that up.
Okay, this is good because, I mean, I was unaware of that story. So, I mean,
well, I didn't.
I thought it was a breakfast cereal reference.
No. Okay.
This comes from a Joe Biden utterance.
I don't have any further information other than it's a Biden reference at one point. Now that I've said all of that, I'm like, man, it's been a while since I've looked at that story. So hopefully all of that's accurate.
I got you.
But he's been made fun of it on the right ever since then. Right. Ever since he made this reference.
Kid Rock. Now, first of all, I mean, you know, it was pretty standard party rap, you know, call and response, get the crowd shouting. You know, I mean, he knows how to warm up a crowd. Obviously, he's made a lot of money doing it.
Sure.
You know, the irony for me as someone who listened to a lot of Metallica is that he's rapping over the track Sad But True.
Say bye, bye. Say bye, bye. Say bye.
And, you know, of course, what immediately occurs to me is, no, that's the theme of this convention. You know, these are the people who right now have the momentum to take the White House. And that is both sad and true.
I mean, that's the theme of both conventions, I think. But, My favorite line out of this is probably not arable.
Hold on, smell the aroma and check my hits. I know it stinks in here because Trump's the sh.
I know it stinks in here because Trump's the.
And yes.
He uttered a profanity. And I thought, man, again.
A scatological profanity in particular.
Right. Talk about things that both conventions can embrace, right? There's something that. That everyone's on board with there.
Yes, yes. And that's one of those ambiguities in the English language to say that someone is the scatological is a term of praise, but to say that they're a scatological is a term of abuse.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, the English language is funny in so many ways. And Coyle, you know I was going to land on Hulk Hogan. First of all, if the Trump campaign does not immediately get a contract in front of Hulk Hogan to appear at every possible campaign event from now until November, they are missing an opportunity because who can work up a crowd better than a really good professional wrestler? And who is the exemplar of crowd pleasing mic skills better than Hulk Hogan?
Yeah.
I mean, he said nothing of substance. but he had the crowd eating out of his hands, which is the definition of a professional wrestling promo.
Yeah, and one of the ones that everyone knows, right? I mean, maybe the Rock would be another one, but I know that there are other professional wrestlers, and if you name them, I'd probably be like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that.
Sure.
But if you ask any American, name a professional wrestler, the name that's going to come to mind, at least for anyone our age and older, is going to be Hulk Hogan.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Younger than that, maybe not so much, but I mean, he is. We know who he is because of his wrestling career, probably not because of his movie career. I mean, Suburban Commando had its moments, but
and No Holds Barred.
Yeah,
I imagine even Hulk Hogan wants to forget about that one.
It was definitely interesting. I didn't check the speaker lineup beforehand, so I was surprised.
Well, like I said, I'm on a lot of professional wrestling fan groups, so I mean, that morning apparently was when it was announced. And what I got was, I mean, it had to be a dozen different, okay, I've heard this rumor, and I just checked the GOP website, and they're saying it's true, so I think Hulk Hogan's at the convention tonight.
There you go. So,
and here, Coyle, is what I promised before we started recording. My strategy advice for the DNC is 8 years ago, John Cena produced a very thinly veiled anti-Trump video called We Are Americans.
Yeah.
And I think that John Cena's got to appear at the DNC.
Yeah, or they could find AI Andre the Giant in.
That would also be tremendous.
Deal with the legal fallout later. Just do it. Don't ask anyone.
Well, Coyle, I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, you know, in my copious notebook scribbles, those are the things that I wanted to talk about. I mean, what kinds of things, you know, again, as someone who teaches political science, I mean, what stood out to you about this convention?
Yeah, so it was, as I said earlier in the episode, and I know we're starting to run long here, but it was a much more normal convention than we've had basically since I've started watching them in detail. So 2020, of course, was COVID, so they get a pass on that. Everyone gets a pass on that. 2016, the Republican convention was this giant mess. Just sort of systematically, it was a mess. The Trump team had no idea what they were doing. They didn't know how to run a convention. They didn't know how to structure things, and generally weren't interested in listening to the actual party figures about how to do that. The major speaker every night in 2016 was a Trump of some sort. The others had moments. So Ted Cruz sort of had his moment on stage. Paul Ryan had his moment on stage, but they were not the keynotes. Even stories coming out of the media and the delegates from the convention was just kind of mass chaos on the floor. Stephen Colbert got up on stage at one point during the convention and took the microphone, not while they were actually doing convention stuff, but while the delegates were in the room. There's kind of a famous video of him being escorted off, but he still managed to get there. Although he also managed to get there at the Democratic convention, but he had to sprint around several security guys to do it, and he had to kind of fight for it.
Now, Cora, real quick, I mean, was Mike Pence not a keynote in 2016?
He was, but there was a Trump that spoke before him. I don't remember which one it was. So yeah, Pence is the exception there. But
struck me, and I'm like, man, no, I, no, no, I that's, don't that's remember a good call. That, but it's probably true.
He did. He was the Wednesday night speaker, the vice president, the night before the president.
Okay.
And also in 2016, Trump was there every night, which is not historically been done. Usually, the candidate is only there the last night, Trump was there every night, so that tradition is just out the window now, at least on the Republican side. So again, this is from what I can tell, the first normal convention we've had in a while. Normal speakers doing normal things, talking about why we've got to beat the other side, the sort of rhetoric that you would expect to hear at a political convention. Noticeably absent, though, and I think this is the part that's sort of more interesting. People who were absent, Ivanka Trump did not speak. She was there. She did not speak, and she was featured in 2016. I don't remember if she spoke in 2020 or not. Jared Kushner, same thing. I think he was there, didn't speak. There are many, many major Republican figures who were not on stage at all. So George W. Bush is a former Republican president, did not speak, did not address the convention, was not there as far as I know. There are several living vice presidents who weren't there. Mike Pence, of course, was not there. Pence was not there. Dan Quayle wasn't there. Maybe that's exhausted the list of vice presidents. But
Dan Quayle was an infamously bad poker player at George H.W.'s funeral.
Yes, yes.
While sitting behind Trump, I mean the glare is just a glorious photo.
Yeah. So again, it's not unreasonable that they're not there. Paul Ryan wasn't there. Mitch McConnell, the person who did more to shape the modern Supreme Court. Was there. He presented the votes from Kentucky delegation and got the votes for Donald Trump, presented them for the Kentucky delegation and got booed while he was doing it. He wasn't there. Instead, the focus was really on Trump supporting figures and people who are running for office in swing states. I mean, those are sort of the people who are featured. Now, that said, they still did some interesting things. So the keynote speaker on Monday night was the president of the Teamsters. So,
yeah,
you know, that's as he said, it's not the first time they've ever endorsed a Republican candidate, but it is the first time they've addressed the Republican convention. So they were doing some interesting things. Right. I'll be interested to see if that works out for him or not. Bringing in someone who is not a political figure at all. Usually you're closing speeches every night are kind of major figures in the party, former presidents, former vice presidents, the Speaker of the House. I mean, those sort of figures are who you have give those speeches, or someone that is obviously an up and comer. So Barack Obama got his start in 2004.
Quayle, let me ask this real quick, because I mean, one speech that I remember, and I can't remember if it was in 2012 or another year, was when Clint Eastwood addressed the RNC.
Yeah.
Was that a closing speech, or was that a setup?
Yes, I don't know. I actually didn't see that live. I had to watch it online later. So those sorts of celebrities.
It seems like celebrities are more prominent now than they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. Certainly not in the Republican convention. The 2016 Democratic convention was a star packed celebrity event. Right. They had the famous song. Where all the celebrities were singing together, and there were 40 of them, or I don't remember how many there were.
Yeah.
There was a chunk of them doing that. So I don't know. I don't know when that starts. So those are people who are absent. Also absent from this, any meaningful reference to coronavirus or the COVID vaccine, which. That's got to be killing Trump, right? The key achievement of the last year of his presidency, he's basically not allowed to talk about because his supporters hate it so much. There was a sort of brief mention by Ron DeSantis about they got rid of the mandate in Florida or something like that. Other than that, radio silence on COVID, radio silence on the vaccine, radio silence on January 6th. Right. No mention of January 6th.
Yep.
Pro or con. Just silence on that. I would imagine those are two things that we will be hearing just wall to wall at the Democratic convention. They had family members of veterans who were killed overseas under the Biden administration, and then family members of Americans who are currently being held hostage by Hamas in Gaza were at the Republican convention. I would guess that we'll see at the Democratic convention family members of people killed on January 6th. And if we don't, then someone at the DNC needs to be fired, because that's just low hanging fruit, right? That's easy to do. Also, no meaningful reference to overturning Roe or the Supreme Court. You wouldn't see a judge at this, but it basically wasn't talked about.
A brief mention by Franklin Graham.
Very, very brief nod. Nothing from any of the big figures, though. And again, in part, the position the party has taken is controversial. So the platform basically says this is now a state issue. The national party is not going to take a stance, fight it out in the states, which that's what it should be. I'm not unhappy with that position. Fighting it out in the states is perfectly acceptable. There are people who are deeply unhappy with that. So
right.
They've left that off the table. They've left the almost no mention of the courts at all. That was heavily featured in 2016, right? Vote for me. Mm-hmm. I will appoint these this slate of judges. He had a list of judges that he promised to pick from that had
right.
been generated
I remember that.
By the Federalist mm-hmm. Society. Again, nothing wrong with that. That's a perfectly normal thing to do. Not usually published. You don't usually say, here are the judges I'm picking from, but there are lists that presidents pick from. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't unusual in and of itself. It was just a little more public than often is the case. So none of that this time. No mention of victories. So he was just granted kind of sovereign immunity as president by the Supreme Court in the last couple of weeks. No mention of that at all. Right. Now, most of his involvement in the courts have been serious losses. So that may be why he didn't want to mention it.
Right.
Especially in the past few years. Still, you think this is a core part of what you did as president. This is your keeping the deal you made with right wing voters to change the Supreme Court to affect Roe versus Wade. You did that and we got nothing. And maybe right. he's just assuming that he's already getting their votes, so it doesn't matter. I don't know. I don't know why that was absent. You'd think that would be.
Yeah, the one weird indirect mention of the Supreme Court was I heard several people make indirect reference to Justice Jackson's, you know, response to
can you define a woman, right?
Yeah,
there was a
which
bit
honestly
of that.
That struck me as weird when it happened because I mean so much of her public presentation by Biden is I'm going to nominate the first African American woman to the Supreme Court and then. When asked, are you sure you're a woman? She says, oh, that's above my pay grade.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're bringing the cultural debate into the court, right? That's the.
Yeah.
And so we got some nods to that, but no discussion. And they really didn't even talk about, you know, the bad appointment that Biden made. Like that was, again, that would have been an easy thing to have brought up. I suppose by not doing it, you kind of defang the charges of racism and sexism.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
But also you kind of leave that untouched for your voters. So, yeah, those are what I had. Anything else that you got out of the convention?
No, like I said, I mean, you know, this is my first real sustained attention to the convention in about 24 years. So I definitely... realize that there's a lot of questions I need to be posing about American politics that I haven't been posing. So, I mean, I think this will be one of many things, you know, being part of this podcast that I'll start posing questions that I wasn't before.
Well, and I mean, we should remember this isn't for you, right? This event, it's televised, but it's really, it's not even for those of us on the right. It's for the Republican Party. Right, that's the, the sort of heart of it. Now it's becoming more than that. It's becoming an attempt at a viral event. It's becoming sort of clickbait, but there is still business of the party that goes on there. They still write the platform. They still have to actually confirm the candidate. There is still party stuff that has to happen there. I would imagine what we'll see eventually as conventions continue to evolve is a lot of that party stuff will just stop taking place on screen. It was already all front-loaded Monday. I mean, it was...
It'll still happen in the city and probably on the same block, but the cameras won't be on.
Right. So, I mean, most of the actual business of the convention was done by 5 o'clock on Monday. So I watched it, but it wasn't prime time. Yeah. No one else was watching. I would imagine we'll just see... We will see less and less of that as that gets more compressed.
Now, on the crawl at the bottom of the screen, you'll see this person has been nominated vice president. Yeah.
Now, the other side of that is the more that's compressed, the less actual work is being done at the convention. And again, that's sort of the reality now. We don't really pick candidates at the convention anymore, barring some kind of...
Right.
So if the assassination attempt had succeeded, all of a sudden the convention matters a lot. Right now it's...
Yeah.
I don't even know if his pick for vice president would have been honored. I don't know what that would have looked like.
Right.
And we'll probably get to talk about this more with the Democrats, right? Because there is this conversation about whether they should keep Biden. So Yeah. This is the Republican convention, not the Democratic convention, so we should hold off on that. We'll leave that as a
teaser. That'll be another episode.
Yeah. Anything else out of the convention? Otherwise, we should move towards the door. This is a long episode already.
Let's wrap this up, because there was a lot to talk about, though, Coyle.
There was. if we were better podcasters, better people, we'd break this up and do, you know, a little bit every day, but that sounds exhausting, so let's not do that.
It really does. So let's accept who we are, wrap up the episode, and do you want to? Oh yeah, you've got a pre-recorded.
I've got a pre-recorded outro, so I will clip that in here. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting ChristianHumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God's.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway,